excellence.
Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Trusted and you feel confident about their future. Inquire at avids.co.za. Avids High School. Forward thinking, empowered futures.
Point of view.
Discussing the world around you.
On the street.
On the air.
And at kaya959.co.za.
So the 2030 Reading Panel 2025 report has just been launched. It was launched today. And this report, I think, is something that we really should be focusing on at real depth, because there are things here that I think we need to contend with. And one has to ask the question, why? Why is this needle not moving the way we really would want it to move? We're going to have Nongleto here to help us unpack what it is that they've found with this 2025 report, and look at ways forward, because they do have some suggestions. They've got some recommendations as well. But let me welcome Nongleto to the studio. She's in studio with us. Nongleto, thank you so much for coming through again today, and good evening and welcome.
Thank you so much for having us. It's always a pleasure being here.
And it's good to be here with Eddie in particular.
Our listeners love you too. They love it because they love Eddie. Yes, Eddie's here today. Look, we are now looking at 2030 Reading Panel 2025 report. And I'm afraid from where I sit, not much has changed. Am I correct in reading it that way?
Yeah. You know, so what's happened, I mean, let me start here. For folks who don't know who the Reading Panel 2030 is, 3 years ago now, in 2022, former Deputy President Mamupumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka convened a group of people that she thought could help think about how to put together a panel of multifaceted type folks from different parts of society to help South Africa reflect on the status of things as regards to literacy in South Africa, and overall then the status of the education system. And the idea was for this pool of people to be able to reach into their own networks to spread the word around the crisis in literacy, in early grade learning, and in the foundation phase of our education system. And the idea around focusing on these levels of the education system in particular is because this is where the wheels fall off. And they have an impact then what happens later on in primary schooling and then in secondary schools. Now, in 2025, I want to mention some of the people that are on this reading panel so people just have a sense of the type of vibe that we're talking about here. So we've got a former commissioner of the Human Rights Commission, Prof. Guam. And then we've got a former senior official in the National Treasury, Michael Sachs. We've got a member of the National Planning Commission, formerly in government in Gauteng in particular. I think she probably is a fave in these streets. Mary Matkal, at the moment, is working with the National Planning Commission looking at basic and higher education. We had researchers from the Department of Basic Education, folks that have been there for over 6 years, and the RECEP, which is an education research unit operating out of Stellenbosch, and they've helped put together quite a bit of this background report. And I want to encourage people, please, on your social media platforms, go and find the reading panel. Mm. You'll be able to find a link to that report there. And we had like former heads of education and now an education and law fellow at UNESCO, Faranaz. We had DVCs of the DUT, folks that have been focusing on teacher training in particular for at least 20 years now, Prof. Nomlomo. We have the VC of the university currently known as Rhodes. Prof. Sizwe Mabizela is amongst those people. And of course, folks that are inside civil society and in the sector like myself and Kenzie at the DGM team. So that's the kind of vibe of this reading panel. And every year what we try and do is invite someone that can help us have a comparative education around what is happening to education systems in countries similar to South Africa.
Mm.
And so this year, we had the former Minister of Education from Peru, who had in a 3 to 4 year sort of term in office as the head of education, was able to move the needle on foundation phase learning and literacy and numeracy results in particular. His name is Jaime Saval. And so what we did is that on day one, we spent time with Jaime running a what we call the masterclass. And we invited department officials from all 9 provinces to come have a conversation with him, giving us a blow-by-blow on what it took at a governance level and what he was calling learner local level interventions to truly transform the education system. And he used the framework and an idea on the culture of reform to move the needle on basic education. So that's what happened on day one. And the officials were able to ask critical questions like how many schools, what are the size of the districts, what were the interventions from other parties in the political system or other ministries to support these moves being proposed by the Department of Education. Things like what was happening with teacher training, and where were the unions, you know, and what is their vibrancy as you change things in the system, X, Y, Z. And you could tell that people were also engaging with the system or a person that had like issues. The socioeconomic conditions in Peru are terrible. I think they are the 4th most unequal country in the world. South Africa is the 1st, as folks listening must know. And they had similar issues, you know. Repetition rates were high. Foundation phase learning, the wheels were falling off. Many of their teachers weren't trained to be able to address the reform in the foundation phase area in particular. Resources, so money, to teachers. LTSMs, and those are learning teaching support materials, were sparse. The infrastructure, especially in the rural parts, the Amazon, for example, were dilapidated in poor conditions. And so as he's describing the context, you can see the room nodding and finding expression in that. And so that was sort of the orientation of day one. And day two, we had Hame come in and again and give just a high-level summary of the what he had shared in the masterclass. And then we launched this report that's got a few things in it. So in the executive summary, what you'll find is that we are looking at 3 things. Now, before I get into the report, there's a peculiar, interesting or exciting thing that's happened to this report and us as the reading panel in the country now that we've launched it this year is that we had 2 education reports that are focused on literacy for teachers and learners released in the last year. And so we had some kind of data source to be able to run a new analysis. So we're no longer just looking at Pearls that came out last year. And remember, please, to everyone listening, that Pearls did say to us that 81% of children in the 4th grade in South Africa cannot read for meaning. The other thing for folks listening to understand, when I talk about reading, numeracy, literacy and that, please hear me not talking about like dictation. So if you give a learner words and they're able to go cow, mat, I'm talking about comprehending what you are reading. So the crisis we have is not an ability to regurgitate what's on the paper. It's an ability to make comprehension of what you are reading. And that's the crisis we face. So we've got these 2 results that have come out. We're able to analyze these 2 reports. And what's damning about them is that they affirm Pearls. Now, one of the things that was interesting from the former Minister of Education, Peru, he said he had to make a political decision. As he came into office, some results were released similar to Pearls, but not the same thing, that put Peru last in the analyses of different countries.
If I can just pause you there, for me, why that's important is that there was an uproar, if you remember politically, you know, this is, you know, they don't have the right context, they haven't done the real work, blah, blah, blah. It's just almost to say it's incorrect. You know, they're prejudicing South Africa. That was really the attitude at the time.
Exactly, because then he makes this point. Because we had a choice here to either go, oh, no, context, oh, no, many other countries had pulled out of the study, X, Y, Z, why us? And they decided as a government of the time that was most important was to take accountability for these results and start gearing the country from a culturist perspective to collectively working towards this reform. And so, I mean, I think that moved the room a little bit. So there are 2 studies that have come out, reports, right? The first is called SACE. That's the South African Systemic Evaluation. And what that does is that it looks at the outcomes of learners being able to read and do their mathematics. And what this sort of says to us, it says only 20% of those in the 3rd grade are performing at grade level or just above in their home language. And that's a similar story to what Pearl says. Mm. It's that where 81% cannot read for meaning, and then it's this that says 80% in the third grade via SACE cannot read for meaning. And most, another thing to maybe for everyone to note is that here we're talking about home language comprehension. Linguists will tell you, and people that are in the sector, is that if you're trying to help children become bilingual, multilingual, great comprehension across the board. And by the way, when I'm talking about reading, I'm talking about reading all things, all subject matters. It helps that you have a proper and strong comprehension of your home language first. And maybe that's why we're seeing our Afrikaans friends die dead at the idea of a progressive Bella. And so that says, the second report that comes out is what we call the SACMEC. And this is the Southern and Eastern Africa Consortium for Monitoring Education Quality. And what this one has said to us is that almost 70% of learners have not developed grade level reading skills in either English or Afrikaans. And this one is running this study in the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. Every time we've come here and talked about the crisis of the reading story, we talk about foundation phase. But the reason this is important is because what is happening in the third and the fourth grade is impacting what happens at sixth, seventh, and ultimately how you go into your secondary school education. Mm. Now people are going to ask, so Nangado, then what's the problem though? And why aren't we able to fix it, or why aren't we fixing it? So the report continues. The second finding of this report, it is, okay, cool. Let's think about one of the key inputs of the system, which are teachers. And one thing that SACMEC shows us, it shows us that only 32% of teachers were able to reach the highest maths competency levels study.
And these are teachers who are teaching maths.
100%.
Bingo. Part of the biggest problem, I think.
100%.
So they themselves did not reach what is required for themselves, let alone
to teach.
Hmm.
So there are two things here. It's this damning stats that says our teachers aren't adequately trained to be able to teach reading and numeracy at foundation phase and or in primary schools. That's a crisis.
Should we then, let me ask you this question here, because these are not, we're not saying these are not unqualified teachers, right? These are graduates. We're not saying that. But we're saying whatever it is that's happening in those colleges or universities is not adequately training them to do the work.
100%.
So their own curriculum is a problem.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And we're going to get to that story just now, because we want to talk a little bit about what is happening in the Department of Higher Education then, and inside of these B.Ed. programs. And then it says, the portion of teachers that are showing only basic maths knowledge have in fact increased in this study from 1.4% in 2013 to 7.3% in 2021.
That's basic maths.
So exactly. So there's something else happening in this report as well. There's a slight improvement in the competencies of teachers, and you're hearing me talk about very, very low numbers, right? But there's also this massive number of teachers that aren't able to make it to the highest levels of competencies. So those that are moving from very low levels to mid-level and or just at benchmark or par are increasing over these years between 2013 and 2021. But ultimately, over 65% of teachers in our system aren't able to teach these competencies. And so what do we do now? Okay. One of the things that the reading panel had suggested in the last gathering, 2024 and 2025, is a review of the education faculty's curriculum to train teachers. And that's underway. So what we've come to know is that the SAHED, the department or the unit that is responsible, the institution that is responsible for setting the curriculum for teacher training across South Africa, has met with the deans and the DVCs of different education institutions, higher ed, and the basic education ministry to commit themselves to a review of the curriculum. What we found here is that there is no set curriculum for foundation phase teachers in these schools. So the schools that are teaching our teachers don't have a baseline or a set of criteria around what do you need to know in order to teach reading, writing, comprehension, and mathematics.
So it's not standardized at all.
Exactly.
Wow. Can I ask another question? Maybe it's silly or naive or controversial. What are we saying about the admission of those who go into education? Mm. Because I hear stories. You want to do medicine, you can't go into medicine. You have option B, you're rejected, and then somehow you push towards education almost as to say, we couldn't help you there. Please, won't you go to education?
Mm. Okay, two things there. The minister from Peru, when setting out the examples of what they did around the reform, he said to us they had to go back and ask the teachers already in the system through massive consultation with the unions to go for assessment to try and figure out where they're at and where they can be a service to the system and or where they needed to beef up skills and capacities. And then they set a high bar for entrance into the sector. But to do that, you need to accompany it with a cultural shift that makes society reconfigure its orientation to teaching. It's not your second choice degree.
Mm-hmm.
You go into it because you are keen to make a difference inside a school community and or have expertise in deciphering language, subject, mathematics, XYZ. And you can then be able to do very well inside of what a lot of the teachers in this reading panel session we had today called the black box. Because they say once you enter the classroom, the doors are closed. No one has a sense of exactly what is happening inside of that classroom. And so you need to build a cohort of highly specialized teachers that are well paid, well remunerated, highly regarded in society, and have incentives to keep producing and performing inside of their classrooms and creating these conducive environments.
How do they manage the tension of that assessment period with the unions? Because that can be challenging.
I mean, the former minister laughed and said many, many conversations. It's around building trust.
Mm.
The sense I got, though, in his orientation is that there's a reciprocal accountability at play here.
Gotcha.
We acknowledge our bit in creating some conditions.
Gotcha.
We're rallying finance and resources to support you.
Yeah.
And this training opportunity, join us.
Okay.
And there isn't a union that will say no.
You don't do one without the other.
100%.
Yeah, got you.
100%. And so that's the other dynamic that's at play here. And then when we think about, never mind the training of these teachers now, let's talk about the supply and demand relationship between teachers. We've talked about that the crisis is in foundation phase to improve the rest of the system.
Mm.
Half the number of foundation phase B.Ed, the Bachelor of Education graduates that are being produced right now, are sitting at less than 20% of what is required in the requisite languages in order to improve literacy in foundation phase.
Sure.
So we know that we need to improve reading and writing literacy in foundation phase.
Hmm.
And of the teachers that go in and out of the school system, only 20% are eligible to help us solve the crisis. And here when we're talking about the requisite subjects, right, the what we call the LALT, the learning and teaching language, we're talking mostly here about that home language story I was referring to. Because remember at foundation phase, grade R to grade 3, the medium of instruction in the majority of schools in South Africa, that's if you're not catching many buses and or transporting your child across boundaries, your child is going to a school that services a school community and uses the language of that community. The schools in Tembisa will be prioritizing Sepedi, isiZulu, Setswana, and so on. And so we don't have enough teachers coming out of the institutions that can teach that, only at about 20% of the required rate. And so when the president in the last SONA says to us, we're focusing on bilingual medium of instruction in schools, we're focusing on some of these teachers being dedicated to foundation phase, because that's the other thing. Many of these teachers, after you've been poached from another faculty, you're likely to want to go teach in secondary schools. Mm. But they say then Things then like the Funza Lushaka bursary should prioritize those that are wanting to go into foundation phase learning in particular, because we're solving the supply and demand issue, and focused on home languages in particular, because alarm bells have finally rung with our government that that's where part problem is.
I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to allow and ask that you maybe call in, you know, with your questions, with your concerns, maybe clarity, 086 000 00959, and voice notes as well on 063 688 0959. Oh my gosh, we almost have run out of time. Okay, so I was asking you a question off air because I wasn't sure I understood my own question. So my question to you was, Nongeto, the trend that you see in private schools, mm, where there's almost this this reliance on specialists to come in to assist, mm, OT, speech therapists, and for me points to the fact that we actually have the same problem everywhere, the inadequacy of, mm, teachers who are not well trained across the board.
I want to say two things on this. I'm hoping that everyone listening could just open heart, open mind.
Mm.
Regardless of what your earning levels are and affluent social stratas, it is important for us inside trying to defend, safeguard, build, contribute to a flourishing democracy, do not give up on the public education system. Mm-hmm. Because that's where you've got multiple, a big sector that is watching the standards of quality inside of the system. And that's why you've got things like reading panels.
Mm.
The crisis about private schools, and I think about this province in particular, where, mm, there's a shoot up everywhere,
mm,
is that the barriers to entry, mm, for any kind of professional to come into a schooling environment and pretend like they know and understand the, mm, praxis, the pedagogies, the experience, the qualifications, is short to none. Because you don't have the same systems that are guarding entrance,
oh,
into
my gosh,
the profession.
Please say that again, because that's scary.
That's exactly right. So you're paying through the nose for, I mean, we have interacted recently with a school that had the majority, a high school, that the majority of their teaching force qualified for foundation phase teaching.
And am I right in assuming, also this is just, you know, it's no fact and data backs this up, but some of them, these are just students who weren't to the same school and they just have relationship with the school. And so their entry, yeah, is based on the fact that they just have a relationship with the school.
Yeah. And I think if anyone has ever seen this inside a school that their children are in, to please report it. Okay? Talk to the school governing body. The school governing body posts in particular are most vulnerable to these kinds of interventions, because you pay someone what you can afford on the school budget. And so you will have Cassandra from previous years, who is great in geography, come in and do the social science.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Going forward, I mean, this is what needs to happen. There are some mm. There's some recommendations.
The one is that we are looking forward to this review of the curriculum at higher education level, and we're hoping that SAHED and the DHET will also give us an opportunity as the general education sector to tighten the terms of reference around this review.
Hmm.
The second thing is that we are calling on the Department of Education at a national level. We're asking provinces too to support us here. We need a reading plan. The last time I was here, this time last year, I was saying we're looking forward to a reading plan. It is now February again on the next year, and we're still waiting for this reading plan. We need some commitment from the divisions inside the Department of Basic Education to back up the minister's rhetoric around her priorities. If your priorities are around bilingual teaching and learning, the improvement of foundation phase education, even if you're including ECD in that framework, but it all needs a clear and concise reading plan.
With real milestones,
costed,
real, all of that.
Who's responsible? Yeah. How will national support these interventions? The very last thing that we need is, we need provinces, So the interesting thing that what makes education special is that the implementers of policies, where the rubber hits the road, is at provincial level. We are encouraging. We had a few provinces present to the reading panel collective today. We're encouraging more provinces to join the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, the Western Cape and Gauteng, in trying out some kind of progressive intervention to focus on foundation phase literacy and numeracy. Try it. Call on civil society to support you. Call on government to support you. Share your findings publicly so we can figure out what we know, what works and doesn't work, so that we can keep trying to move the needle forward. Maybe then we even inform a stronger national reading plan. More provinces, please join. Parting shot here. No more education budget cuts. The austere budgeting approach by government is costing us a highly burdened system. We can't do some of the things that we imagine a transformative and a progressive reform can do if we have less than we need. I'm not asking for more money, just stop the cuts.
Gary is in Eldorado Park. I don't know. I think you'll be able to hear what Gary has to say, but Gary wants to comment. Hello, Gary.
Hi, good evening, my lady.
Hi, welcome.
Yes, thank you. I was just listening to that damning report, but yeah, it's serious and it's worrying. I just wanted to figure out, are we able to establish what is missing now that we had previously in the education system at work? Coming to mind, I'm thinking of inspectors that used to pay visits to schools to do assessments on various matters within the school system. I listened to the report and it gives a percentage of teachers that are inadequate, for lack of a better explanation, to teach the subjects or the classes that they do, but we do not know who those particular teachers are. And inspectors would serve a cause by identifying such people and perhaps assist them by providing further training.
Thanks, Gary.
So I was trying to think when Gary said when things were better before, because I thought, I don't know how far back you are you're referencing.
Yeah.
But pre-democracy, the education system was even more unequal than it is now. Bantu education had no dignity to it. So I don't know if it's ever been better before. And the stats we're reflecting on now are focusing on the progression, believe it or not, of trying to create an equal and a quality and dignified education system. The milestones are men, but we are moving past a dispensation where there was entirely two different education systems, maybe even three, at play here. And then when you think about things like subject advisors, I was looking in this report at Mary Metcalf's paper and wondered here if she had added her findings on subject advisors and school inspectors. But it's not here, and we will find it, and I'll share it, and we'll put it online with this
Thank
interview.
You.
We have... So when budgets are cut, it isn't just less teachers, less scholar transport, less meals, infrastructure burdened. It's also less subject advisors. It's also where you lose subject advisors. They're no longer called school inspectors. You're unable to recoup and or replace them because there's no money. Those posts get frozen in the system. There is a province in this report, Gauteng, that's run a reading reform intervention, and they're using subject advisors to go and monitor that implementation. It's not super scaled across all schools in the province, but it's also one of the very few. It's an urban province that has not enough, but an adequate amount of subject advisors that can make it to schools. In provinces like KZN, some teachers had reported, if I remember Mary Metcalf's note, a full year not having seen or witnessed an experience of support from a subject advisor. So even that kind of capacity is short in the infrastructure of the department. And that's part of the trouble here. And so what we're calling on provincial departments to do is to find creative solutions to use the existing resources to build these reforms and interventions in those schools. And that's why I will always make a clarion call to the general public. Every single person living in South Africa must be thinking about what you can do to support the schools nearest to you. And here I'm not talking about tables and chairs that children must carry on their backs from McDonald's.
You said that on the radio. We apologize for that foul language.
Excuse me.
Well, that's what, thank you so so much for coming through. Really appreciate it. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm sitting here and I'm getting quite agitated myself, because what do you do with a generation of people who've been let down for so long? What do you expect is going to become of this generation of young people? And I think it is worrying. Nungata, thank you always, as usual, for coming through and for this insight. And we will put it online. And please also add that Mary Metcalf's report as well. So, yeah, that's Nungato Matubetube, who's Equal Education General Secretary.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.